Amém. All right, so this is the part that we call the afterburn. So hopefully that was a blessing and everybody got something out of that. We're going to get a whole lot more out of understanding David's heart. See, I don't think that we fully understand sometimes when we want to be like somebody, we don't understand what it takes to be like them. Well, I want to be like Yeshua. Well, I don't really understand what it's like to be Yeshua. We only have a little bit about his life for a couple of years worth of his life. But what about someone like David? David wrote a whole lot about what it was like to be David, what his heart was like, what he struggled with. Why don't you, if his heart is like a heart unto Yahweh's heart, why don't we look at David a little bit and read some of the, Psalm 119 really does line it up. You know, I've told this story before, but I think it's good to teach it here just real quickly. But, you know, I had somebody who sent me an email one time and said, hey, I was kind of in the Hebrew roots for 5 minutes, you know, in Messianic, and then I felt like the Spirit told me to go spend 30 days doing nothing but reading Galatians and Hebrews. Any wonder where he ended up after that? And he said, and after that, I decided I had made a mistake, and I threw out that whole Torah stuff and all that Old Testament stuff and all these other things. And he sent me a long document of, you know, arguing why he did what he did. And he said, and I want you to show me some respect and not just ignore this thing. If you're a teacher and whatever, and read what I have to say, you know, and consider it. So I sent him back. I read the whole thing, and I sent him back an email. I said, now I'm going to ask you to do something. I read your stuff. I don't agree with it, but I read your stuff. So I'm going to ask you to do something to see if you have integrity. Of course, I never heard back from him. I said, I don't want you to spend the same 30 days like you did with the other one. I don't want you to read nothing but Deuteronomy and Psalm 119. And tell me if you end up in the same place you ended up after reading Galatians and Hebrews, not knowing what you were doing. Because Peter puts it right in 2 Peter when he says, look, if you don't have a good teacher helping you understand, you're going to twist the scriptures to your own destruction. You're going to get real confused because you need a teacher. You're going to read Galatians without a teacher and Hebrews without a teacher. I promise you, you're going to have no idea what you read. It's going to get you all into, you'll end up back on Sunday in Christianity is what you're going to end up with. But if you read Deuteronomy and you read Psalm 119, that'll balance out your head and your heart real quick. Do that for 30 days and see where you end up. And you shouldn't end up losing the New Testament. You should understand better what Yeshua is talking about and James is talking about and Peter's talking about and John's talking about and Paul's talking about all over the place. They're quoting out of this stuff all the time. But I never heard back from them. But just so you know, I did what he asked. I said, okay, because I wanted to see if he would do what I asked. Fine. And you should know me. I read through somebody's 47-page vomit, okay? But I did, and I read it. Some of you know if your email is more than 3 paragraphs, I'm not reading it. I'm too ADD and too busy, but I read this guy's thing because I wanted to see if I would call his bluff, so to speak, call his bluster. But you should read Psalm 119 a lot from the point of view of saying, can I say these words and have them be my words? These are David's words, but can they be your words? They should be, you know, they should be. Who's first over here? Okay. Deirdre, okay, she's going to come over to you, Deirdre.
Verse 20 of Psalm 119, when it says, my being is crushed with longing for your right rulings at all times. A thought popped in my head. Speaking as someone who has been without a father figure off and on, and yeah, when they did have a father figure, it just was a bad situation every single time. And I know that there are many other people like that in here and online. I always wanted to try and, you know, do the very best that I could. You know, how do I get them to appreciate me? And a lot of times it failed, but the desire was always there. And then as a teenager, you know, you wanted to do that for, you know, the boy you like, or the girl you like, or you just to get that desire because you want that, you know, you want that attention, you want that
approval.
Approval, yes. And the thought occurred to me, well, I've been trying to do that my entire life. You know, just wanting that approval from a father figure. Shouldn't that be how we are with Yahweh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a lot of that, I think we forget that. A lot of us, I think, forget that, you know, that pain of, you know, not having that approval. But we should remember it, I feel. I think maybe Yahweh allows us to go through that so that we can strive for his approval more deeply. Because okay. I know when I finally was able to learn, because I could never understand the whole father thing in Christianity. I tried. I never could until I came here. And I was able to realize, okay, well, this is what a father is supposed to be. This is what Yahweh is. And I never grasped that, or it was hidden from me in Christianity. But if Yahweh is supposed to be our father, I feel especially that everyone who has desired, you know, who felt that pain of not having the acceptance of a father, I feel like we should strive harder for it, you know, just to get it. I mean, everybody should, but mm-hmm. Do you understand what, does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. Just always add to the context here that in verse 20, he's talking about wanting the corrective right rulings as well, because it goes right into the being rebuked and
right.
That kind of thing. So, but do we actually desire his correction, knowing that his correction brings the fruit? Okay? And so a lot of us have had correction that didn't bring any fruit. We didn't have a good relationship. We didn't have a good authority structure. And so the correction came, but it wasn't always in a right balance and a right way to bring about good fruit. And so that's a whole different sort of situation there. But yes, I appreciate that. And I also appreciate that. I know there's a big struggle for many of us, and it's not just the ladies, but the guys as well, who did not have a good father relationship. So we don't have the experience of that vertical that he's giving us as a metaphor here in the scripture, and we've not actually felt that here. And so hopefully the congregational vertical structure that we can put in place can give you a way to at least have a taste of it if you would allow that to work. And some of you have already had that experience and have been very blessed by it. Okay? Where's the mic now? Who's next?
First of all, thank you for this. It was really good this week and perfect timing with everything that I've been going through. My question / comment, you mentioned in Psalm 11. Sorry.
Okay, Psalm 11.
That was in the beginning. Mm-hmm. That Yah will test you when others are trying to destroy the upright foundation. Stop. And I wrote for myself to stop believing those that are not qualified to speak about you. Can you draw a more home? The things that are being said about me to my children, and trying not to, like, I don't believe them, but I'm angry about what's being done. Does that make sense?
Well, look, there are things that are going to happen in life that are going to hurt. They're going to be painful. They're going to be intended to be painful, not by Yahweh necessarily, but by the person doing it to you.
Right.
And we have to be at a place where that can wash over us and not affect us, because you can't stop people from being people. And there are always going to be those in your life that are going to, in a intentionally hurtful way, try to create pain in your life. Now, you can choose to receive it or you can choose not to. That's hard. Step one, and we had a discussion about this a couple of days ago with some people where I said, look, the first step in all of this is to realize you have a choice. Because it's not easy to respond to what's coming at you in a negative way and just let it wash over you, just to let it. You have to first recognize, I can choose right now how to respond to what just happened. Okay? And I've said in the past that if you don't respond correctly, it's because you were not yet mature enough in your growth to respond correctly. So it's a place that reminds you, this is an area I need to continue to grow in. Okay? If what around you causes offense to you, because a selfless person cannot be offended, you have not yet grown enough to handle it. So if you pop your cork, if you get angry, if you get offended, if you get whatever it is, a negative emotion you do, that's an area of your life that you are still too much self and need to grow. Like when you try to put in passwords that don't work. And
so I'm not reacting negatively. I didn't call the person and just blast them like
I've done
before.
No, but it hurt you.
Right. Let me clarify where I'm meaning is that I saw the words. I was like, okay, I know what's going on. I know what they're trying to do. So I called a spade in my own head. And then I tried not to, you know, I kept along and didn't let it. These people don't know me. So,
okay.
And they can't speak into my life. Right. My question is when it's being said to my children, how do I not respond? Like, explain, you know, does that make sense?
Look, when it's said to your children, as long as if you can control it, obviously you would, so they don't do that to your children. But then you just have to explain to your children that there's another side to the story, okay? That person is speaking out of their pain or whatever it is that they're speaking out of. And look, the children are just going to be like every other human being. They're going to hear all kinds of things from all kinds of different directions about everything. And they're going to have to learn over time how to sort through that and decide what's what. So they're going to hear things about you, but they also know you. And they're going to have to sort out what they're hearing versus what they know. Okay? And you can't control that, but you can try to give the input that you want them to hear the other side of that. Okay? And if you attack the other person, that's probably not going to work. You have to say, look, that is coming from a person who happens to be upset with me for whatever reason. And so that's coloring what they're saying about me. And it's coming out of a place of their own pain and anger. And so you need to understand where that's coming from. Okay? And you're going to experience people in life like that on unfortunately, a regular enough basis. Okay, where they're going to say things about you someday because they're angry with you and they're going to say things that aren't true about you. Just help give them the perspective and the balance. Now, of course, they're young, so it's not going to be so easy, but they're old enough that they can understand a lot of this. Okay?
Okay.
I mean, they know that you're in a divorce. They know that there's a custody little battle thing going on. They know that people are therefore going to try to do everything they can to leverage and manipulate the children. And help them understand that they're going to hear from both sides. And if you show them that I don't want to manipulate you, I want you to understand, I just want you and that's fine. And if you have a choice and desire to be somewhere else, that's your choice. But just don't go with and just don't listen to everything everybody says about me. They're saying it because of their pain. Okay?
Okay. And then I had another question. I'm sorry if I'm
that's okay.
Taking the mic. So a situation arose. This is completely separate, but situation arose recently where I had somebody in the congregation that came to me and said, I don't agree with what you're doing and decisions that you're making, and you really need to check yourself. It sent me into a tailspin because I was like all of a sudden starting to question everything.
Okay, wait. So why did it send you to a tailspin?
That's what I'm trying to get at. Was I wrong for sending it in? So...
Answer the question. Why did it send you into a tailspin?
Because I didn't understand where they were coming from, or I didn't understand why they felt it was their place to even... And that's my question to you.
Well, hold on. Wait. We're going to sort this out. You all need to see this. This is what you all do. All of you do this with different situations. Okay? So, no, if you didn't understand, that doesn't necessarily put you in a tailspin. If you don't understand where they're coming from, that doesn't put you into a tailspin. Or why they think they should be able to speak. That's not what put you in a tailspin. What put you in the tailspin?
Because I felt they were wrong?
Well,
maybe
because now you felt like you needed to defend yourself to someone who had overstepped some sort of a bound. In other words, if you were at peace with everything you had done, then you could simply look at a person and say, I'm sorry, excuse me, but... You don't have the level of relationship with me to talk to me that way or to say that. This has nothing to do with you. And be at peace to say calmly and to say, I appreciate that's your opinion. I don't know why you're sharing with me, but we don't have that level of relationship. So there's no tailspin to happen from that. What happened was it triggered an emotional response because you know others are attacking you about your decisions. Others have taught, and so now you're feeling judged or attacked. There's some sort of emotional place, okay? In other words, some part of the feelings got out of the feelings bag and got stepped on, and now you want to think about what happened there. You can't stop people from doing this. People are going to do these kind of things. Maybe not the same person. You might be able to stop them from doing it by saying, excuse me, while I know you think you're helping, but you're not, but I want you to know we do not have that level of relationship where you get to talk to me that way. Okay? And that can maybe stop that. Maybe. But now it's the tailspin is your response to somebody overstepping a bound. And so that's why I'm talking about the tailspin spot.
Okay.
Why did you get thrown into the tailspin? Did you think maybe they could have been right and you start questioning yourself? Did you think, I mean, I'm just saying, these are all things that right. can cause a tailspin.
Well, so what when it happened, I went to leadership and I said, this is what was told to me. Do you see that this could possibly be an issue? And they said, if you know what you're doing is what you're doing and there's no question, then, you know, be on your way and don't let other people. But my question to
which
you.
Which is a good answer.
Yes, very good.
Okay.
My question to you is, as the congregation, as the body, is do we have that right, if we have a relationship with someone, to call them out and saying the decisions you're making are not, that's what I'm trying
no,
to
say. No, not unless you have that relationship with them. You can be friendly enough and close enough to another member of the congregation where you know you can do that with each other. That's a relational agreement.
Okay.
Just the fact that you're in the same congregation doesn't give you the right to go over to somebody and say, I don't like the decisions you're making. I think you're messing this thing up. You're wrong about all this stuff. Because I want to tell all of you, it's none of your you-know-what business. Okay? You know what? Let me go to Revelation, where it says, okay, so in Revelation it says, no drunkards, no adulterers, and no busybodies are going to be in the kingdom. Okay, you guys are way too much busybodying around. Mind your own you-know-what business. If you think there's a real problem with somebody doing whatever you think is a real problem with, you come talk to me and let me decide what to do with it. You do not have the right. Okay? Unless you want everybody to look at your life with the same microscope. Anybody want that? Then knock it off. And I'm not kidding. There is no place for that in here. And I hear these things happening, like what's happened to her. I've heard that many times happening to lots of different people. And you know what? If that person comes to me and tells me about it, I'm going to tell that person I need to know who it was. And they're going to say, well, what? I don't want to get anybody in trouble. No, you're going to tell me who it was. And I'm going to go over to that person and say, excuse me, I just want to say that this came up and I want to just hear your side of it because I'm not going to just assume that what I hear from one side. And then I'm going to find out what's going on and I'm going to say, look, you need to know that if this is what happened, that you need to realize you went overstepped a boundary. Because every one of you makes dumb choices and dumb decisions. And this may have been something she did that maybe wasn't so smart, but it's not your business to correct it. Okay? Unless you have that level of relationship. Because some of you do. Some of you actually have a relationship with each other that you have that. And don't just assume you have it. It needs to be something that's actually openly understood. And then you should do it gently and you say, look, in our relationship, I may be wrong, but I feel like that we have the type of relationship where I can share something with you. Would that be okay? Because I'm concerned about something. And recognize that you could be wrong. And by the way, when you go to correct people, realize if you're the one that's correcting and you're wrong, you're in double worse trouble than you thought they were in. So whoever did that, if that's what happened, now again, remember, if you hear something, I want to teach you another lesson. I only heard what she said. She may have filtered that through filters, may have been in an emotional place. So I don't know what happened. Neither do any of you. After you, no matter what you just heard, you do not know what actually happened. So don't ever do that, because if people come up to me and say, oh, blah, 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 about so-and-so, I said, well, how'd you know about that? Well, because so-and-so told me that's what happened to her and my friend, and then this guy did that. I said, wait, you heard from her, you weren't there, and so you heard one half of a story, and you know that the other so-and-so did whatever. Well, she wouldn't lie to me. Well, she's not lying, but whatever she said is going through whatever her personal filters were. So you have no idea. It may have been 100%, 80%, 50%. How much of it was true? Who knows? You catch a person in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they're going to totally get what had just happened completely wrong. Anybody else ever do that? Completely get it wrong? And so we got to be really careful. So you come to me, trust me, I'm going to say, okay, who was it? What happened? Are you sure that's what they were trying to do? And then I can maybe talk to a person and say, look, this is what come up. Nobody's accusing you of anything. You know, give me your side of how it happened. And then I will know for sure that whatever they both said that was in agreement, that's probably what happened. The other part, no idea. Okay? Okay? But I'm telling you, if that happens, exactly, even if it wasn't the person she's talking about, but if any of you do that, you are wrong. Don't be doing that. Okay, the body is not ready to have anybody come up to them in that kind of corrective way. He is asking in this Psalm 119, David is, for Yahweh to do it. And some of you think you're his instrument of destruction or correction or whatever you want to put a word on it. Okay? Oh, I know people actually sent me emails saying that Yahweh has told me to go around correcting leadership. Really? Are you Isaiah or Jeremiah being sent to the king? Who are you? What qualifies you to do all that? You know, and they're going around correcting ministries. Be careful. That's a big problem. This is a dangerous place to be in. You know, do the old danger, danger, Will Robinson. You know, that's don't go in that direction. It's no good. All right? And you look about as intelligent as the floppy-armed robot going, danger, danger. You know, that's kind of what you look like. All right? Okay, we're waiting. Don't be a busybody now. Okay? Love on each other. Support each other. Encourage each other. Don't be all busybody. And worse than that, don't you, this is the next level that would have been worse. Don't you go to each other talking about her or somebody like that and say, I don't think she's doing the right thing. What do you think about it? And the next thing you know, you're all talking about her. That's worse than the first problem. You guys, you know what? There's a hierarchy of like maturity. You know what the least level of maturity is? People that talk about people. The least mature in the world, all they do is talk about people. Then there's another level, they talk about things. The next level, they talk about ideas. If all you do is talk about, can you believe so-and-so? Did you hear about so-and-so? Did you see what so-and-so put on Facebook? Did you see what this one did on that one? Do you see? Really? That's where you are maturity-wise? Now, I don't mind you talking about people saying, did you hear what so-and-so did? Aren't you proud? I'm so proud of them. That was so awesome what they did. Can you believe that's a wonderful thing that just happened? And they wanted to share this, you know, whatever praise. And that's okay. That's not what we do, though. We're all like, can you believe? Did you know that so-and-so? Did you hear this? Did you see that? And you, if you're on the receiving end of that, you need to put your hand up and say, hold on, stop right there. Nothing good's coming after the beginning of that sentence. I don't need you to go there. Put an end to that immediately. All right, where's the mic? Okay, Ken? See that, Ken? I remembered your name. I'm starting to learn people's names.
Thank you.
Good.
See, I remembered to put it to my mouth.
There you go. That's even better than remembering your name.
Real quick explanation about where this question is coming from. I'm a bit of a wannabe perfectionist. I mean, I try to do that so much in my life, it aggravates my wife because she says, if you could get past that, you could get more things done.
Right.
So it's really serious.
Right. So the red said to the blue, if you could get past that, you'll get more stuff. Okay, there you go.
All right.
Did I nail that?
You nailed it.
Okay, just wanted to say.
So the... a lot of this lesson today was the word righteous kept coming up, and righteous this, and to be righteous, and like in Psalms 11, Yahweh is righteous, and the upright shall see his face. Mm-hmm. Psalm 31, shout for joy, Yahweh is righteous. Shout for joy to Yahweh, you who are righteous. And that came up. And then in 119, right at the very beginning, and this is sort of where I'm going with a question. In verse 3, well, you read 1, 2, and then 3, and it became an understanding to me that I would not have realized this by reading this by myself, but by your instruction, you pointed out that if you read, you know, one, blessed are those, and then two, blessed are those who observe his witness, who seek him, and that all to me just sort of fits into the idea of being perfect and being righteous. And then verse three, yes, they shall do no unrighteousness, they shall walk in his ways. And so Norman, my first thought was there it is again, you know, I can't walk in his way unless I'm righteous. But you pointed out, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were saying, no, this is a consequence of our path, our walk, our following the way, following the Torah, being covenant, all those things that we do to grow. The consequence of that is that we will do no unrighteousness.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's the ultimate result down the road at some point. In the meantime, the point I was making is that if you are doing something that's unrighteous, is because there's an area of the other elements here that you're still working on. Something is weak or not complete yet in terms of maybe you're not seeking him with all your heart. Your heart still likes some other things. Maybe you're not, you know, walking in all of his teaching. You're listening to other people. Maybe you're not, you know, so there are things in the walk. Now, when you have it all properly lined up, there's no unrighteousness. When you don't line it up right, then something is off, okay? So it's like if you have your, let's say you have a rifle and you're shooting at a target, okay? And you've got the sights and the scope and everything and the targets, let's say it's a good couple hundred yards away, so it's a little bit far, and then you shoot and you miss. Okay, so was it a problem with the gun? Was it a problem with the sight? Was it a problem with the person pulling the trigger? Something went amiss, because if everything was lined up, you should have hit the target. Okay, so now you got to figure out what piece was out of alignment. Did I wiggle a little bit on my, and so the whole gun was out of alignment? Did I not sight it in properly so that my sights weren't aligned right? Something was out of whack. And so, but when it's perfectly aligned and everything, then you will not miss. You'll hit your target. Okay? And so that's what it's talking about here. And that's the context when it talks about when we're in Messiah and all these things, we do not sin. Yes, but we do sin. But guess what? When we're sinning, it's because we stepped outside of all that. We stepped out from under that covering. We came out from under all of that for that moment. And that's why we can repent to get back in that place. Because if I take away all the human factors and set up a gun on a table, a rifle on a table, all locked into place, set it and calibrate and everything else, and remotely trigger that shot so there's nothing to wiggle or vibrate or anything else, and it still misses, that means it's something in the gun itself or the sight. There's something wrong. There's a piece of the necessary elements out of whack. So now I have to look and see, okay, I eliminated that factor. So, okay, now I check the scope. Scope's good. Now I got to figure out, okay, if it's not the scope and it's not me, then maybe it's something actually in the barrel or the way that the gun was put together or something, right? You have to start eliminating what could be causing the problem to find the problem. But as long as everything lines up right, guess what? The bullet shoots straight. Well, you're the same thing. We're talking about the straight, the upright, the straight. You want to shoot straight, then you got to make sure that all of the things necessary to shoot straight are lined up correctly. If you don't line it up correctly, you're going to miss. Go ahead.
And then the final point or observing, our challenge to read Psalm 119.
Yep.
At the end. I take it would be a good thing then in verse 2, blessed are those who observe his witnesses, that David would be one of our witnesses.
Sure. Sure. Right. Look, observing the witnesses is that you're supposed to see the things that we read about that we know happened and be affected by it correctly. You should be affected by knowing the creation story, that he is the creator. We're told about that in a lot of scripture. People are reminded he's the one that created everything. We read a few verses like that today. We should be reminded and impressed and in awe knowing that he's the one that brought them out of Egypt. He's the one that parted the sea. He's the one that, keep filling in all those witnesses. He's the one that brought them to Sinai, gave them the Torah, all these things. He's the one that did all these things. So if he's the one that did all those things, then we should know from that witness how to approach him correctly. And so guess what? We also see Abraham. We see, good examples like Abraham and Yitzhak and Yaakov and David. And of course, we could also see David had a few problems, some very public and very embarrassing problems. But we also can see how he handled those problems. Makes David one of the best witnesses for us because we can relate to him better than some of the ones that we really never see them making really big mistakes. Well, David made a few big ones. And we could all say, wow, if he gets to get in and he gets to be held in such high esteem, having made those kind of big mistakes in his past, then certainly knowing my past, right? You're talking about yourself, right? Knowing your own past, wow, then I can turn this thing around too, okay? Because very few of us did anything on the level of, you know, lusting after a woman, having the husband killed, and then taking her for ourselves. Most of our stuff doesn't raise to that level, okay? But yet, here's a man that ultimately is a man after Yahweh's own heart. That's pretty impressive. Okay, who's next? All right, Steve?
All right, in Psalms 11 on 1, it had the words, flee your mountain. Is that kind of instructing us, rather than fight and argue with those shooting arrows, that we should try some kind of avoidance tactics?
Well, it says in Yahweh have taken refuge, so why do you say flee to your mountain like a bird? Okay. In other words, you don't have to run. Yahweh's got it handled. That's not to say that you shouldn't avoid and leave things, but this is talking about a particular type of situation where rather than trust in Yahweh, who's already said, I'm going to handle this, why are you running to the mountains as if you're going to fix things by doing that? Okay? Okay, Richard?
I'd kind of like to go along with what Ken was talking about. I asked you about that. I think it was, maybe it was last week. I asked you about the word bitachon. I think that's the way you pronounce
trust,
it.
Trust, bitachon.
The trust, yes.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that in 33:18 through 22 is a perfect example of that. And it fits in. It's amazing how this book seems to fit together. It fits in that shows that we're actually doing a loving commitment. It's the doing part. Even it finishes up, even as we wait for you, because I don't know about you guys, but sometimes it's like, okay, Yahweh, I know you saved my life, but what have you done for me lately?
Amen.
But where I ended up with is in 119:6, made me think, you talked about the mirror in James. I thought about the verse right above it, which is 22, where it talks about doing. And if I'm doing the right thing, I won't be ashamed. If I'm doing the wrong thing, I will be ashamed. And sometimes not doing anything, we think we're safe, we're fleeing to the mountain like the bird, but we're actually being ashamed because we're doing the exact opposite. We're not doing when we should be doing. Does that make sense?
Yep. Amen. Okay. Awesome. Appreciate that. And, you know, we have different words that we deal with for understanding, having trust, having hope, having belief. You know, because sometimes people say, well, I believe. I say, but are you trusting him? Well, that's a factor within belief. That's why we use emunah. Emunah has all of that kind of wrapped up in it together. Okay, who's next? All right, Rob, live stream.
Okay, from Anna Zimmerman, says Psalm 119, verse 15. Rabbi, how do you define meditating in his orders? What does that look like?
The idea of meditating on is where you quiet all the other noise and you're thinking about something, so you're not distracted. All right, so you think about something that he said to do or not do, and without a lot of distraction, you consider it, okay? So he said, eat this, don't eat that. He says, keep this day, don't keep that day. And you might think about it, okay, let me understand, I want to make sure I understand it so I can do it, that I can embrace it. It's a heightened awareness. So I don't just read the word, but I'm much more thoughtfully aware in my consideration of what I'm reading, so it's a meditative thing. I'm thinking about it. I'm dwelling on it. So hopefully that answered the question. Thank you for the question, Anna.
Okay, from Olivia and Janet Hoffman. It says, Rabbi, Psalms 11, verse 5, deeply convicted to examine where I am falling short. My question is, When I act or speak without patience, love, kindness, self-control, etc., am I considered wrong before Yahweh?
Look, the definition of right is doing what he said. Definition of wrong is not is going doing the opposite or doing something that breaks what he said, goes against what he said. So, in a sense, when you look at the fruit of the ruach, when you're not joyful and patient and you know loving and all the other things it talks about, right? Meek, kind, and all the other things, self-control. Well, then you're wrong at that moment, which is why I've told people often, if you're in a situation where you're discussing something about scripture, and technically you could be right, but if you're not maintaining the fruit, you're still going to be wrong. So the answer to that question, I guess, would be yes, okay? If you can't do this with the right nature, you know, the right loving, patient, kind, gentle, etc., then you're still wrong. I still struggle with that just like everybody does, and my particular one is that I can lose my temper pretty good. I don't always have the patience. So guess what? In those situations, I'm wrong. I don't care how right I might be with the words coming out of my mouth, I'm still wrong. That doesn't now mean that the things that came out of my mouth were wrong also, but I'm still wrong. Even when you're right, you can be wrong. So sometimes you can be both. Technically right, but in essence, you're still wrong. Okay? Next question.
Okay, from Julian and Maria Lawson says, can you explain how conditional and unconditional love fits in with having favor with Yah?
I can. Next question. You just want to know if I can explain it. I can. Okay, this is probably a better thing for you to do is just go listen to the grace teaching, because you're starting to get confused about things from a kind of more of a Christian mindset. Because conditional love and unconditional love is something Christianity manipulates emotionally in you to get you to see things the way they want you to. It's not about love, okay? We talked about in this teaching that love and expressing that love the way Yahweh wants it expressed is through commandment keeping. If you love me, do what I say. All right? Now, there's unconditional love, meaning I will always love you. I brought you into existence. Just like a parent with a child, I will always love you. I might not like anything that you're doing right now. Some children are doing nothing but bringing shame to themselves and everybody around them. That doesn't mean I stop loving you. I made you. And so you're always going to love them. So that part's unconditional. The love relationship that brings what we want is a condition. He says, if you love me and express that love through obedience, I will give you these things. That's conditional. How you express the love is a condition of receiving certain things that are part of those conditions. If you get married, you did at one point at least profess to love the other person. Why do people get divorced? Because they didn't really love the way the love was expressed, which is conditional. Am I making any sense? So they didn't stop loving each other. The conditions were not being met on one side, the other, or both, to the extent where finally they felt like, that's not working for me. Because the way you're expressing love wasn't what I was hoping or expecting when we got to started. Now, part of the problem was nobody probably had you walk through a discussion about your expectations. Now, people that are getting married now that work with me, I make them do that. I make them actually talk about what's expected of the wife. If you're the husband, right, if you're the man getting married and you say, look, I expect as a wife this, this, and this, and you should expect from me this, this, and this. And the wife should be able to say, as a husband, I expect this, this, and this, and you should expect from me as a wife. And you should be able to sit down and talk about that and see how well they match or not. And if they don't even come close and you guys can't work that out, you shouldn't get married. Oh, but I love her. I love him. That's just an emotional whatever, okay? Should you be married to everybody you love? Do you not love a whole bunch of things that aren't good for you? Some of you love a whole bunch of foods that even though they're allowable scripturally, they're not good for you. Oh, I love certain ice cream. Good. So should I eat like nothing but ice cream? No. So just because you love it doesn't mean it needs to have that level of relationship. How the relationship is good. So the Father says the love relationship of covenant is expressed through obedience. And he expresses to us the love language of blessing, provision. You see how that works? That's the condition. If you give me my love language, I will give you yours. You want to be provided for and taken care of and blessed. I want to be obeyed. Guess what? That's the love language. Will I always love you anyway? All the way until I throw you in the lake of fire, I will still love you. That's his sunken in. I will love you. My heart will break that you just refuse to listen. If you're a parent and you've got a child like that, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Your heart's broken, but you still love them. But you can't express that love the way you had wanted to because you cannot give them all that provision and everything else while they're going out there doing all the dumb stuff they're doing. So hopefully that answered the question somewhat. Who's next?
Okay, from Kayla Reich, Psalm 119, verse 20. If I want to be sure I'm not getting it wrong, that I'm doing what is righteous, what safeguards can I put in place to ensure that I'm not fooling myself or misguided?
All right, so you need two things. One is to be honest with yourself, and second, have somebody who can be honest with you that you trust. Okay, that doesn't have any agenda except being your friend and loving you. Now, often that can be your spouse, but not always, because spouses can sometimes be not only A, a little bit hard, or B, you may not be able to receive it correctly because you're too close to it. But you need that accountability person. Somebody who they can come up and just say, hey, you know me, I'm your friend. I love you, brother. I love you, sister. Well, you know, but they can share with you. Or better yet, instead of them busybodying into you, where you can go up and say, listen, you're my friend. You know me. Is there something you see that I don't see? Am I missing something? Because maybe as your friend, they respect you enough not to open their mouth and be a busybody, but you can ask them, okay? And then you can be that good friend for them, all right? You know, I remember a situation, maybe this would be a strange situation, but I mean, it'd be a situation. I was, and this is maybe a polite way that you can handle that, right? So I remember when I was working in the gym, I was in the health club business, there was one of the ladies there was in charge of the aerobics program, and I knew she was struggling with her weight, and she was on a diet program and everything. And I noticed at one point, after she'd been doing really well, that she started gaining it back. And I found a polite way to talk to her about that. And she thanked me, she said, because all of my so-called friends never said a word to me. They didn't notice that I was struggling. They weren't there, you know, to kind of talk to me and see if there was anything going on. Now, she had been going through something personal that was causing stress. Stress was causing the problem, right? The thing is, but I was willing to go up to say, hey, I noticed that you were going this way and now you're going this way. Same idea here. I noticed you've been going this way, but now all of a sudden it looks like you're going that way. But I said it in a way that she not only appreciated, but she wasn't offended. She didn't think she wasn't insulted, you know? Because I didn't go over and say, hey, I thought you were on a diet. Look at you. You packed on a few, didn't you, or something? Oh, now, if you're a guy and you have a guy friend, you probably could do that with some of them. Some guys can do that with guys. I don't know if the ladies can do it with the ladies. The guys can do that with the guys sometimes. But you got to know who you're doing it with. But as an accountability, I knew how much she was trying, and I had a concern, and I said, hey, I noticed, you know, is there something I could help with? Is there something going on, you know? Need to talk to somebody, whatever. And so you need that accountability person. But the first thing also is that you have to have a heightened awareness of what you're doing and what's motivating you and is your head in the right place. We have to all start to do a lot more. I don't want to sound all weird and new agey. This is a metaphor. But you're going to have to be more out of body, meaning you need to be able to look at yourself. So I'm not saying it in a literal way. What I'm saying is, but you got to be observing yourself and see how you're treating certain people. And you should be, sometimes your own voice should say to yourself, are you kidding me? That's the way you're treating that person? Or that's the way you're going to respond to what they just said? What's wrong with you? That's not the way Yeshua would do it. That's not the right way to do it. That's not. So this little voice, and so it kind of be above your, just watching yourself. Observe yourself. Everybody else is, you might as well too. Then maybe you'll catch it before they have to say anything. All right, next question.
From Monica says, question. Listening to people criticizing you, you may have answered it. People criticizing you and talking lies about you is awful. Our mind is over and over thinking vengeance. What would ways be to shout, or to, I guess she might be one trying to say, shut your own mind. Did you answer that already?
I did, but just remember that in life, everything that comes your way, okay? If I took my phone right now and I went to go throw it over here at Mark, Mark could go like this and just get right out of the way. Or he can catch it, right? So just because somebody throws something at you out of their mouth, you can kind of just turn aside, just let it go right by. Let it wash right over you. You don't have to receive everything that's thrown at you. Everything that's sent in your direction. But you have to recognize that you have that choice. You know, you could be happy 24 hours a day. Oh, no, Rabbi, that's impossible. Why not? It's a choice. You can have joy 24 hours a day. You can have peace 24 hours a day. All these things are choices. Oh, but you don't understand. My husband makes me, my wife makes me, my kids make me. They don't make you do anything. You choose. It doesn't feel like you have a choice. That's the problem. Why? Because you have already well ingrained, well rehearsed habits, triggered responses, and it's hard to break them. And so you go into autopilot. We know the whole thing we talk about, oh, that person sure pushed my buttons. Well, that's a button, really. It's a triggered response. And you all knew how to do that. If you have a spouse, you can push your wife's spouse, your husband. You can push your wife or your husband. You can push their buttons anytime you want. You know you could. You know exactly where they are. Matter of fact, you know if you do the right combination of them, boom. Okay? Spontaneous combustion. Beep, boop, boop. Or you could take the buttons away and they go beep, boop, boop. And you're just standing there. It's like beep, boop, boop. And you're standing there. Beep, boop. And you're like, and you just look at them. I'm sorry, I removed the buttons. They're not connected anymore. I've disconnected the buttons. Apparently, you still have yours, though. I get rid of mine. Push them all you want. You know? It's like that button that, you know, on the elevator, there's a closed door button that doesn't really work. Or if you live in the big cities, the button on the crosswalk, you know that doesn't do anything. It's just there to give you something to do so you think you're doing something, waiting for that light to change. That traffic pattern is not changing just because you're pushing that dumb button. In New York, anyway, that's the way it was. Push the button. I watch people push the button going, really? You really think that's doing anything? Like the system of the whole city is going to care that you want to cross the street. Besides, you're a New Yorker, just walk. We don't look at the lights, we just walk. It's like, why are you all of a sudden, you worried about that? You're pushing the button. Everybody just walks across the street wherever they walk. I remember being in Milwaukee at a conference, and the conference ended at about 10 o'clock at night, and I was with a few other people, and I went to cross the street, and as I'm going out there, and being from New York, nobody's, it's a downtown area, so it was easily closed a lot of hours earlier. Nobody's driving, there's nobody anywhere. So myself and the other people, we were just gonna walk across the street wherever we were, in the middle of the block. We didn't even go to the corner. And so there was a few people that were local who they saw us going, and they kind of lifted their foot to step off the curb, and they were like, they couldn't do it. The light was red, and they weren't at the crosswalk, and they just had to wait. Now, I appreciate their obedience to the laws and everything else, but now when I'm looking at these people in New York, when I'm pushing this button, it's like, go. No, like everybody else. Anyway, so next question. We have probably time. I'll go till 5 o'clock. I'll go one more.
Okay, it's from Nadia. Says, can you expand more on doing Torah to become holy and hard work with what Yeshua said about taking his yoke because it is easy? Are both talking about the Torah?
Okay, read the question again. I think I know what I want to say, but just one more time.
It says, please expand more on doing Torah
right.
To become holy and hard work with what Yeshua said about taking his yoke.
Which is light.
Okay. Which is light.
I could do that. Okay, that's easy enough. All right, so first of all, the word holy is a problem because you don't understand what holy is because it's a word that Christianity has turned into whatever. So it's what I call Christianese. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So what's the real word there for holy? Okay, kadosh, which is set apart. The only way to define set apart is Torah. All right? So those things that are kadosh is only defined by Torah. So you can't actually be holy without Torah. But see, then Christianity would say, oh, you're trying to work your way to holiness or work your way. Well, just understand that it's kadosh. It's holy means that something that is set apart for the purpose of what Yahweh set it apart to be a purpose for. So if you are using something for what it's meant for, okay, be like if I took this pen and decided to use it as a screwdriver, that's not what it was designed for. Okay, probably will break and probably not work exactly right. But things were designed to be used for a specific purpose. You were designed for certain things. The seven-branch menorah in the holy place was set apart to be used a certain way. The priesthood was set apart for certain things, right? All of these things have to do with being set apart or holy or kadosh. And so that's what's important to understand. So it is only the Torah instruction that tells you what that is. Now, Yeshua talking about a yoke, he's talking about discipleship. That's a discipleship language. That's because it's the same idea of saying, do not be unequally yoked. In other words, don't be instructed by if you're a believer, you're instructed by Yeshua. If you're not a believer, you're being instructed by who knows what, and now you're unequally yoked. So in other words, he says, my instruction is light. My burden is light. I'm not going to lay on you a heavy yoke. Now, bear in mind, those in the Jewish community were being heavily yoked because they were being put on them all of the traditions as well as the Torah commands as if they were all equal. That was a much heavier burden. So you're still thinking of this through Christianity's idea of, oh, there isn't anything to do. Well, that's a superly light yoking. There's no yoke there at all. As a matter of fact, that's not even funny. I mean, it's not a yoke or whatever. I'm trying to get a joke out of there somewhere. Okay? But there's no yoke there. Okay? I mean, there's no teaching. There's no instruction. It's just believe he's Messiah. He says, come be discipled by me. My yoke is light. The instruction is like, is it really that hard to eat differently or keep Saturday and do different holy days and not steal and whatever it is, not commit adultery and not, I mean, is it really that tough to do all these things? No. Okay? Now, you go try to be an Orthodox Jew, you got a lot to worry about. I mean, it'll take you a lifetime just to figure out all the things that they have on the list of things that you don't need, need to worry about. 39 things you should know that they don't do on Shabbat. You got to know all 39 and make sure you're not breaking those. And these are on top of the already understood Shabbat rules, okay? To write it all down, it took 72 volumes for the Babylonian Talmud. 72 takes up a whole bookcase, full wall, 72 books, okay? With an index, so 73 books, but 72 books. That's a burden, okay? You think 613 commands is a problem? Forget about that. Go be a lawyer, figure out how many laws you got to learn and be aware of. So there is no conflict with this. The yoke is light. There's nothing hard about it. The hard part is that it's a human being trying to do it. That's the only thing that makes it tough. There's nothing hard about any of this. Okay? If you could get you out of the picture, okay? Okay? When you say, well, but he hurt my feelings. Well, that's the problem. It's the my feelings part. Okay, you get that me out of the mix, the you out of the mix, then there's nothing to hurt. Well, you offended me. Well, get the me part out of there. There's nothing to offend. There's just something happened. Somebody said something. Somebody did something. And there's nothing, there's no offense to be taken. It's the me that can get hurt. It's the me that gets offended. It's the me. A selfless person can't be offended. You have to get the whole you and that self, everything, get that out of there. And then without that in the mix, there's no issues. Why do husbands and wife fight? Because the me on this side is fighting with the me on that side. Well, you blah, blah, blah. Well, you blah, blah, blah. Beep, boop, 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 beep. You know what? The next time that your spouse starts to push your buttons, do that and you both laugh. Beep, boop, boop, beep. That'll end the fight right there. Or get something thrown at you, one of the two. Somebody was like, yeah, that's more likely. Beep, boop, beep. Wham. Somebody's going to show up to service with a black eye. Rabbi, I tried that. Beep, boop, beep. And I got a coffee mug in the face. I think we should definitely end with that. I think I was probably fine with that. Okay, let's go ahead and have the children out there. Let's get the